Welcome to Sidetracked, your unofficial agency of record. I'm Shane.
And I'm Emily, and we help run Trek, a tech-driven, full-service creative agency based in Rockford, Illinois.
Here on the podcast, we tackle our clients' biggest marketing challenges. We reveal what's worked for us and dig into real-life case studies and practical strategies you can put to work today.
Curiosity is our compass, which is why we always start with a question. Okay, today's big question is, how do I know if my SEO is working? And here to help us answer this question is Jake Sellers, account manager. Welcome back.
Hi, Jake.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
Yeah. So we talked in our first season when you were with us, you have a little bit of a background in SEO and PPC, and so you have an interesting perspective that you bring to our clients. So we thought you'd be perfect for this discussion. Also, a little birdie told us that you love to use ChatGPT searches, and that's sort of an interesting twist on today's conversation too. So let's start with, first, do you ever Google things anymore? Do we Google or do we AI search in ChatGPT or Perplexity or whatever you use?
I switch back and forth, but I still use Google quite a bit. And it ranges from like just little things like within like my actual work, but then just life. I feel like there's so many, and my wife always like chimes in and says what I would say of like, oh, when did this song come out? It's like, let's Google it. Like there's anything you would want to know is there. So like any opportunity to find like the most minuscule answer, I just Google it. So
do you use AI mode at all in Google? Have you tried it, or do you do Google Gemini, or is it like it's either classic Google search or it's ChatGPT?
Only, yeah, Google Classic or ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. I don't mess around with the other stuff too much, but I mean, I do trust like the general AI overviews and a little more than I probably should.
Yeah, even really? In Google Classic, we can't get away from the AI. You have the AI overview whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
What about you, Shane? Do you Google things still, or do you use
AI? I do. I Google things. I really only use AI search assistants as a research tool at work. I have yet to ask an AI search assistant anything outside of work.
And so the exact opposite of Jake and his lawn.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it that way as long as possible.
So then you can't get away from AI, though, when you're searching things on Google, which, by the way, I do as well. I still use classic Google mode. I'm not one of those people that will, like, type into Chrome Google, and then you go to the Google site, and then you type it in, like, I at least am proud that I'm advanced enough to just search it in the bar. But the AI overviews are maybe sometimes reliable, sometimes not. Jake, you seem to trust them. Shane's making a face like she does not. Shane, have you had some interesting experiences with AI overviews?
I recently Googled, are we in daylight savings time or not? Because I can never keep it straight in my head. And I was trying to send out an invitation to something. And the AI overview gave me the wrong answer. And it seems like that's a pretty like clear cut yes or no answer. So no, I don't trust them yet.
I think how you even just phrased that is interesting, because I wouldn't have even asked, are we in this time? I would have said like start of daylight savings 2025, to try and get to the date, because my inherent distrust is the same. And I also like don't expect it to know the answer, like yes or no. So it's interesting even that the way you were searching for that is different than like would you have searched that way before AI overviews?
That's true. That's more of an AI assistant search. And I think the AI search assistants are really changing the way people do search. And we're asking questions in natural language more often. I've kind of always done that with Google. I don't know. What about you, Jake?
Yeah, it's for me, it's always been conversationally asking questions, just because trying to, like, I've found whenever I've tried to formulate it in a way that, like, Google, I think that Google would want it, it doesn't give me the exact, like, answers that I'm looking for. And that's partly why I like ChatGPT as much as I do, just because you're able to ask things in a much more conversational and contextual way, rather than trying to limit it to just, you know, even just a long tail keyword is difficult. And then you just limit the amount of, like, context you're given back. So I do
like you're having a conversation, not figuring out how to use a tool.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting the way behaviors have changed. And, like, I even remember when I first started at Trek, it was there, like, keyword stuffing on websites was a thing. And short tail versus long tail keyword was a lot more of a hot topic, where, you know, you could search, like, you know, Cubs game, June 30th, 2025. And, like, you would get a schedule that, like, may or may not be the schedule that you were looking for. and then they rolled something out where you could say, what is, you could, like, actually ask it as a question, more like the long tail. And the results kind of dramatically changed. And we've talked about this before, but, like, these AI overviews are, like, another wave of, like, training people to search on Google anyways. So as an organization that helps people get found with their websites through search engine optimization, what are the things that, I guess maybe even just up to this point, we would do to help people appear in search? Like, what are the things that you look at to help somebody be found more organically?
Well, as far as how I approach it, there would be, whether it, like, is a product or service based, like, I, you know, what are you wanting to get found for? What are the, like, you know, what do you refer to your services as? Because there are some times to where, you know, their service is proprietary that they've branded, and it may not be how the industry at large speaks to it, or maybe even some of their competitors speak to it. So I do like to get, like, an aggregated list of everything that they're wanting to rank for. And then as far as being able to run that through, like, SEMrush or, like, another, like, Ahrefs or another, like, tool, or more pointedly, I would use, like, Google Keyword Planner just to see what other keywords are out there. And then really from there, once you have a large just data set, you're really needing to look at it from a few different lenses. One just being general, like, search traffic. Does this keyword have enough search traffic to, you know, necessitate all of the time and energy we're looking to rank for that term? Then it might also be, what's the current domain authority of your website? And then what's the, you know, competition surrounding this term? And what are some of the other sites that are ranking for that term? And what does their domain authority look like? Just because it would be harder to communicate or to compete for a term that just has some high competition. But that's really when it gets into the nitty gritty of, you know, what at this point are we able to rank for? And then we get in a position to drive traffic for those terms. And then it becomes a tiered approach to where you just move up and up in terms of, like, higher search traffic, higher competition. Yeah, there's a lot of variables to think about. And, you know, running through that with a client, I think it's sometimes at the onset where you're actually doing some education of just SEO in general, the question is, like, why can't we go for that term now? So a lot of that learning just comes through conversation once you're doing the research.
Yeah, or, like, why am I not number one? Like, we make this thing, and, like, we're the only ones who make this thing. We should be number one. Why aren't we number one? And then how fast can we be number one? Those are always tricky questions, to your point, to answer, because it's a long-term building process to train Google, train AI even nowadays to understand your website. And you said something at the beginning there. They're understanding like the intent of the person searching too. And so, Shane, maybe you can talk a little bit about how we can use the keywords to create content that helps with the goals of like what we want them to do on the site, or like from a content perspective, how we kind of lean into that intent from the the searcher.
Yeah, a lot has changed recently with SEO, but one thing that hasn't changed is that we like to start with, what are the goals? Are we trying to get traffic to the website because we want to get more leads? Are we trying to use the website to convert existing leads and actually get them to, say, talk to sales or take some other action? You know, some of our clients don't even care about ranking in search because they have very specific audiences that they're trying to reach, and they know who those people are. So are we, you know, trying to get an existing database of users to take some specific action? So we like to start there. What are we trying to use this website to do? And then figure out, okay, well, what keywords are we going to go after then, based on what the goals are? And most of our clients want to get more traffic to their website because for a really long time, traffic has correlated with leads. I think a tricky thing that is happening in the SEO space with the advent of AI search assistants and a lot more people going to those search assistants is that there's just a lot more zero-click search happening. So people actually may be learning about your business in an AI search assistant and then not clicking through. They might not wind up on your website because everything they need to know about your business gets served to them in that conversation. And there aren't great tools out there to measure any of this yet. There are a lot of tools that have been kind of hitting the market in the last year or so for people who are trying to do SEO but for AI search assistants, and people don't even know what to call that yet. Like, some people are calling it AEO, some people are calling it GEO. We don't even have a name for it yet. We don't have a great way to measure any of it yet. I haven't found a tool that I love for any of this yet. Like Jake, you mentioned SEMrush. We use SEMrush for SEO. They've rolled out some AI tools. None of them are perfect yet. So that was a really long-winded way to answer your question about what we do from there. The answer is kind of we try to figure out what the goals are, and then using whatever we have at our fingertips today, we try to accomplish those goals. And the things that are at our fingertips are changing rapidly.
So we might, and I think we've said this before, there's been a drop off in like organic traffic across the board because of those zero click interactions that you're saying. So how important is it then to keep your website optimized for search still? Or is it important? Like, is that something that people should just say, like, okay, that's not worth spending my money on anymore because AI has blown everything up? Or is it still valuable to optimize your site?
I would say yes, still important to optimize your site because there still are those people, I mean, that are going to go to the traditional SERPs and look through it via those means. But even through, like, say, Google's AI overviews or even in, you know, other search, you know, search results features that they have, or if you're just talking about like pure ChatGPT or other like tools, they're still sourcing from online. They're still sourcing from that content. You know, let's say if somebody going still with the suburban dad trend is, you know, searching ChatGPT or utilizing Google AI Overview for, you know, comparing and contrasting sprinkler systems. I mean, making sure that your product pages or your website is optimized in a way to where you're still showing up in that is very important. You know, and there, I personally have struggled a little bit with the changes that Google has made, just as it contrasts with what their original mission was to get people from their site to another site as quickly as possible. And now their profit model has changed to where they're trying to keep people on Google as much as possible. But with that said, there's still other ways that you can optimize your site and optimize your Google My Business listing, or utilize Google features to where you're still showing up in the places that people are. So even like organic shopping listings would be a great way to still show up if people are not clicking through. So it has changed, and to Shane's point, the measurability has dropped off a little bit, and that's frustrating. But it may show up in other ways to where if you've optimized your site in a way to where you're showing up in these, you know, different Google views or even in pure ChatGPT type tools, that might show up now as direct search now that, or like just somebody going to your site directly, whereas it might have been, you could have seen it previously in, you know, oh, this is coming in through blog listings, and then it goes through onto core pages of the site. So I still think it's very important.
I think it's even more important than it used to be, because we used to basically just optimize for Google search. And now you need to think about optimizing for Google search. You need to think about optimizing for, we're using ChatGPT as a shorthand, basically, for Perplexity, Claude, Gemini, all of these places that people are searching. And Jake, one of the things you said was you need to make sure that you're showing up where people actually are. And I think that's the thing we need to keep in mind. Everybody used to go to Google. They had a monopoly. They still have a monopoly, but it's very quickly changing. And so you need to think about showing up in all these places and optimizing for those places. And optimizing for AI search assistance is different than optimizing for Google search. So you need to have a website that does both. And to use the sprinkler analogy example, you basically, somebody's going to go to ChatGPT. They're going to be logged in. So ChatGPT has all of this information about that person and the things that they care about and where that they live. And they're going to say, what's the best sprinkler system for me? And ChatGPT is going to give them an answer based on all of these things that they know about this person. You know, like, this is a dad. He lives in Rockford, Illinois. He's got two kids. Like, this is the size of his house and the other things he's asked about his house. And you want your product to be surfaced when ChatGPT gives that best product answer. And so that means for these LLMs, you need to be giving them like way more bottom of funnel content. Like it, you need to be creating content for your website that says, this is the best sprinkler system for suburban dads with two kids. And like, it's just like a way different type of content than we used to do for Google search. Google search, it was usually about top of funnel, really informational content. And now it's much more, going back to the question about intent, content for people who are ready to buy because they have already done all of their, you know, they've asked all of their questions already, and they're getting to the point in the conversation where they're ready to say, okay, I want to purchase. What's the best one for me? And they just want that answer so they can go get it. I think the type of content that we create for AI search assistance is not going to hurt us in Google ranking. I don't think that they need to work against each other. It's just we need to think much differently. We used to be pretty narrow in creating informational, educational content. We need to think much more broadly about the different types of content we have to create today.
So I do want to talk about like the difference between optimizing in content and keywords, which is kind of the beginning, but then the low hanging fruit of like, once you have those keywords in that direction, then like the technical optimization and making your site easy to to read for machines. But first, something you said, Shane, in that bottom of the funnel content, historically, that's always been something that people gatekeep a lot more because of like, oh, well, I don't want to give them pricing. I don't want to give them these other things because there's so many variables and I want them to talk to sales ultimately. So I think what you're saying is kind of turn that on its head and give them everything. Don't gatekeep that bottom of the funnel. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, basically. We've been saying this for a while now. Stop gatekeeping stuff because honestly, gatekeeping content stopped working before AI search assistants came out. Like people just started getting more, they weren't as quick to give up their email addresses for, say, an ebook. I think that stopped working in like 2017. Put the pricing out there because somebody's going to be in ChatGPT asking for a pricing comparison. So make sure that that LLM has the answer for them.
Yeah, it's a shift in thinking for the whole business, especially mm-hmm. in B2B worlds, because I think there's a lot more like consumers. If you're selling to consumers, you're like, okay, the price is $20. That's what the price is, unless you have a promo code or something. But B2B, it ends up being a little bit more. I feel like people are less inclined to share their pricing. So that's a little bit of try it out, see how it works.
Yeah.
And then it's going to take a shift. But I think like what you're saying is like ultimately the conversations and the leads that you do get at that point when you do give the opportunity to convert are going to be much better qualified because of their interactions with your brand up to that point.
They've qualified themselves. If there's one thing that I would want to get across to all of our prospective clients who might want to work with us and really get them to understand, it's how much of the buyer's journey happens before your prospect ever talks to you today. B2B and, you know, B2C, but B2B, it's hard to get through our heads. Like, oh, but they need to talk to sales and we have to qualify them. It's happening online now.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about keyword research in the beginning and you need to align on what your audience is looking for, what their intent is when they're searching, how do you, what your goal is for your website, and then how do you map your keywords or identify the phrases that you want them to use and the phrases that they actually are using to put a strategy in place for the content of your website. So the other half of what we do is when we're evaluating the effectiveness of someone's SEO strategy is a technical audit. So I don't know, Jake, if you want to talk a little bit about like what we're looking at in a technical audit, like what do we mean by that term?
Yeah, really looking at the website from a technical perspective to make sure that one, our site is crawlable by search engines. Two, that they're indexed by search engines. And that, you know, in terms of coding this content, that is structured in such a way to where search engine crawlers can understand what the content is about, because they don't view it in the way that a user views it to where they can just get the context. They actually need to be able to see, you know, this is the coded H1. This is the most important topic that they're trying to hit with this piece of content. And then even through like H2s, H3s, seeing how it's structured, that helps
what
being
is,
served.
What is an H1? What is an H2? What does H stand for?
A header, like a heading one, a heading two, much like you would look at a newspaper, like the very, you know, on the first page of the newspaper, the biggest heading is the most important. You know, and then, you know, for instance, if we're going with that same sprinkler analogy, if we're just going to keep with that, is, you know, a heading one would be, you know, top sprinklers of 2025. And then an H2 might be, you know, if we're talking about like best overall value, you know, or another H2 might be, you know, if you're looking at it from like a water pressure perspective. I don't know. I'm getting lost in the metaphor. But I mean, structuring it in that way helps search engine crawlers understand like what's the big idea with this. And then also from a technical perspective, we look to make sure that, you know, your images have alt text there. So if, you know, search engine crawlers can see, you know, all right, if there's an image that they can't read visually, they can read, you know, from that alt text that we place in there. And then also assessing, you know, page load times and just overall site speed. Because Google does also, in addition to the content and the keywords, is paying attention to the user experience. So they want to make sure that, you know, the site that they're directing somebody to not only has good content, but they're going to have a positive user experience. So really making sure all of that backend stuff is set up in a way to really maximize crawlability and exposure with search engines, and that overall usability is as good as it can be, can help with ultimate rankings as well.
So I heard you say our H1s, our H2s, our alt text, mm-hmm. Meta descriptions, maybe. So like summarizing mm-hmm. the page. Mm-hmm. What are we missing, Shane?
Page titles.
Page title. URL mm-hmm. itself too, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. And these things still very much matter to Google and don't as much matter to any of these AI search assistants or LLMs, although the like content hierarchy is still very important. So these H1s and H2s, because they need to be able to understand, you know, the most important takeaway of the piece. They need to be able to understand the conclusion that the piece came to. Those are very important. Less important is the user experience, because they don't care about the user experience on the website. They're not trying to send people to your website.
I think it is worth mentioning, though, as part of that user experience, is that all of these things make it easier for people with disabilities or people that are using accessibility platforms to help understand and read your site if they have issues or complications in the way that they encounter your site. All of these things, the technical side, helps them understand your website better. So overall, it makes the website easier for a human to understand and follow, regardless the abilities of that human, which I still think is important in optimizing for. Especially if you know your audience, and like if you have some kind of medical website or a way that is something that is very important in the journey of, you know, a consumer, especially, I guess, those kinds of things may really, really matter to your buyer persona. And that's an mostly easy thing to do, is on the back end. Make sure you have those H1s, page titles, alt tags, alt text, meta descriptions, all of those things.
Yeah, even in the days of keyword stuffing, our approach as an agency was write for humans. Like, don't waste your time with any of that. And thankfully, it didn't last that long anyways. Google figured out that people were doing that. But even today, I would say the same thing, even though AI search assistants don't really care about the user experience of your website, write for humans. You do want your customer who ends up on your website to have a really good user experience. And for you want it to be easy for that person to reach out to you when they're ready to.
If I had to venture a guess, I would say AI right now doesn't care about it because it's still earlier in its ways. But I feel like if you built a site for humans that was genuinely helpful, eventually they're going to capture that in some way or mirror that interest, because that's what they want. They want AI to mirror the human interaction experience, capture that in a way that's maybe a little more selfish to keep them on their sites and that kind of thing. But I do feel like they will, like I'm thinking about Google prioritizing experience in their search rankings and showing websites that have that human element of people vouching for it And like Reddit being prioritized more. Like, I think they do care about it, but
AI
they just
assistants
don't
really care about the quality of the content and the helpfulness of the content. What I mean they don't care about is like once that person
alt
gets
tag
to your website, what's the UX of the website? They don't care about that. Google still does right now. So, but no, they are all very focused on how can I deliver the best answer to this person who's asking me the question. So I think focusing on helpful content for human beings is the most important thing.
Yeah, and that's a reflection of your brand too. You know, it's a good reflection of yourself. So we've talked about a couple of different ways that AI and traditional SEO are sort of changing. Not sort of. They are constantly changing. But our main question here is, how do I know if my SEO is working? And we've talked about there might be signs of that. You might be getting more traffic that you can see is coming from a ChatGPT or Perplexity or whatever. And some data sources will show you that it's coming from there. So you might see that. But to your point earlier, Shane, probably not very consistently.
In our tools, they show up either as direct traffic or referral traffic. It doesn't show up as search
specific
traffic. I wish it did.
Okay. So that's hard to tell then. And then maybe you see a dip in organic traffic, maybe not. But let's just, for the sake of this conversation, let's say you want to improve your website traffic and you want your SEO to be better. How would you go about improving that?
Yeah, as far as traditional Google search goes, I mean, if you're looking in the SERPs, which would, for those who may not know, the SERPs are the search engine result pages. So whenever you go to Google and you see, you know, at the bottom, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if, you know, there may be a couple things, you know, let's say, you know, for instance, there's a search term that you had ranked for in the first search engine result page at the top. And now you're dropping in rankings. That might be one way of detailing that, you know, your SEO isn't working as well as it used to. A helpful, you know, way to address that might be looking at those pages that are now ranking well and seeing how they're structuring that content. Because I feel some people may see, oh, I'm not ranking well for this term anymore. I have to include it a bunch more on the page itself, which is not necessarily the answer. Sometimes in the way that Google is reassessing who to rank higher, it may be, you know, overall structure. It may be, you know, the actual term has changed from what once was, you know, a transactional term. Now it's more informational and you may need to switch the way your content is geared to now rank for that term.
Or perhaps this competitor is demonstrating more experience and expertise on the subject matter. Like you've got something that's maybe written in a generic brand voice and they've got a subject matter expert who's writing in their own voice and demonstrating their own experience. It's something that Google really cares about.
Yeah. And you know, it used to be you would have one, you know, really well-developed piece of content for a particular keyword and you could rank very high for that. And now, you know, Google is much more focused on topical authority. So it may be not only this term you have to rank for, you have to look for other terms within the general subject matter, within relating subjects to then write content about, to not only establish that expertise, but establish that topical authority, to where it really can be a rising tide raises all ships situation. And a good way to look for that, I mean, if you're utilizing Google Keyword Planner, they might present you with keyword opportunities as well as SEMrush or other tools like that. But even utilizing Google to see, you know, one of the search features that they have or the people also ask section. So, you know, if you're searching more of like a long tail, you know, consideration type term, you can look in there and see what other types of subjects that you could write about. And in the same way that you might for, you know, other people that are ranking for those terms or your known competitors, seeing what types of content that they're developing, you know, not to only to inspire, you know, what you might write, because each organization, each company can speak to things in their own way, and making sure that the content is differentiated enough to where Google does see that as unique content.
Or you just forget about Google and try to rank in these all.
I was just going to ask. So, like, you've been saying Google a lot. So, yeah. Then what about the LLM? So you're saying, Shane, just say.
You know, that it's going to be, you're going to be going after really long tail keywords if you're trying to rank in LLMs, because people are asking full questions. They're having full conversations. And that's going to help you on Google too. So, you could. I mentioned I don't really love any of the tools that are out there for tracking AI search assistant results. And one of the reasons that I don't love them is that so far, all of the tools that I've seen, you have to put in your own prompts that you're, and then you're measuring how you're doing against those prompts. But there's no tool that will tell you, well, what are the prompts that people are actually putting into the AI search assistants? So with Google, like, we have tools to tell us what are people actually querying. And I've been doing this long enough that I know that what people are actually querying is usually different than what you guessed they might query. Yeah. And so I don't really trust any of these tools yet, because I don't think we're going to come up with the prompts that people are actually asking. That said, I'm sure those tools are in development. We will have those tools soon. So I think if you start just thinking about, you know, what people might be asking, or what you want to show up, like which prompts you want to show up for in these AI search assistants, and start developing content for that, it's not going to work against you in Google. It will help with your Google results too. So you might as well, because this is the direction people are going with it.
Problem solved. This particular client already had really good website traffic, but wanted to make sure that they were being found by people outside their industry. And like we were talking about earlier, they knew what the people in their industry would search for to find them, and what they would call their products or their services. But they came to us wanting to improve not website visits, but exposure into some of the newer markets, and then by default appear in more searches in these kind of new industries. So Shane, maybe you can tell us a little bit about how we went about that with SEO.
Yeah, and I think this question of traffic quality is so interesting, because it's fairly easy to rank for keywords and get a bunch of traffic, but it's not as easy to get the traffic that you want and the qualified traffic. So this client realized that, and they have hundreds of website pages. They have a gigantic website. And the website pages are really rich. They're long. They have tons of product information. And so the first thing we did was actually we just looked at like the very basics of the technical SEO. And we pulled together a spreadsheet of all of their website pages and the pages, SEO titles, meta descriptions, and H1s. And that's as far as we took it in our first round. And we went through and just gave them new titles, meta descriptions. And the meta description is that little 150 to 160 character description that's showing up on the search results page on Google, that hopefully entices somebody to click through. And we just made sure that the title, the meta description, and the H1 had the keywords that they were trying to rank for, and were enticing and interesting. And we worked in a lot of this client manufacturers in the USA. We worked in a lot of made in the USA because that's pretty enticing in the meta description for their audience. And we made the changes over a period of a couple of months. These type of changes, I don't know, what have you seen in the past, Jake? How long does it take to see results on something like this?
It can be slow moving. I mean, it could be anywhere from 3 to 6 months or longer. It certainly is, you know, the long game. You know, there's other levers like PPC that's, I like to liken it to like a fad diet, to where SEO is much more like you're eating your fruits and vegetables and walking 3 times a week. And in, you know, a year or two, you'll, but those doing it in that way, you get to retain a lot of the effort that you put into it, to where that is sustaining, whereas, you know, you stop spending on PPC and then you stop seeing that traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a long game, but it can be exponential. And so we did that over a period of a few months, and we're starting to see the results now. And I think we'll continue to see better and better results. So even though for a lot of our clients, they're seeing a drop off in traffic from organic search because of the rise in zero click search, this client is seeing steady and rising, a little bit of a rise in their organic search. And I think that it will continue to go up.
Yeah. And to the point on kind of expanding outside the industry, they've had a lot more sales inquiries that are not their normal people that they would work with. They've had more general net new relationships, which for them is unusual because their industry is so small. They typically work with the same set of large customers. And so they've had a lot of new sales inquiries from people that didn't know them before that have nothing to do with their typical industry. So that's cool to see immediately as well. They did a lot of the hard work in sitting down with their subject matter experts, like you said, Shane, and like really putting that rich content on the site. And we helped in some ways, but, you know, we kind of bridged the gap in my mind between what was there and like extending the hand out to the new audiences to help them, you know, kind of make that handshake and pull them in for a sale. That sounds maybe kind of aggressive, more aggressive than what I meant it to, but, you know what I'm saying?
Problem
it
solved.
It worked. Problem solved.
I like the fad diet analogy, Jake. I'm going to use that.
Please.
That was a good one. Well, thanks for joining us, Jake. It's great to have you back.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Soon.
This was fun.
This year marks our 30th year in business. In this season of Sidetracked, we're gathering Trekkies at the bar to reminisce about our favorite moments from the last 3 decades.
One of the most memorable days was, I think it was the first time I got to a baseball game in the summer. It was our company outing. I was off work that day. It was a Friday at the Rivets game. And I had a charity golf tournament that we were putting on. So I had been at the course since 9 o'clock, had a few beers. And by the time I got out of there, it was like 5 o'clock. And my wife drove me up to the Rivets Stadium. And we got in and we're probably about an hour late. And I see Mike. And he goes, "Hey, I signed you up for a contest." And I'm like, "All right, cool." So I just get to write something down on a piece of paper, guess a song that they're going to play. So the 7th inning came around, and they called me up in front of everybody on the deck. And so I had to go up there, and it was a Chris Stapleton song, and I love Chris Stapleton.
Which song? Okay, sorry.
So I had just started listening to him.
I love Chris Stapleton.
Yeah, so I only knew a few. I knew some Steel Driver stuff, but it was probably going to be something I didn't know. So the girl up there, the intern or whatever, the MC, I'm not going to know this. Can you help me out? So she told me the song, and it was Midnight Train to Memphis. And I got up there, and I acted all confident, and I said, Midnight Train to Memphis. And everyone cheered and screamed and everything, and then I chugged a beer in front of everyone. And I felt so guilty. About 2 weeks later, I came in, and I was like, I didn't know that. I cheated. So that was a lot of fun.
Wait, did you win a prize or anything?
No!
Then it didn't matter that you cheated?
It was just an embarrassing moment for me.
Aww.
They came to the little special deck that we were on as the group, and they said, hey, we're going to do this, like, quiz stuff, and we're going to do this during the seventh inning stretch. And like Chris had said, he wasn't there yet. And I'm like, all right, here we go. Signing Chris up. Signing Chris up. Yeah, it was a classic moment. And I think we have it on film, too, so that's really cool. Yeah.
Well, cheers to 30 years.
Thanks for joining us. You can learn more about Trek at trek.com.
If you liked this episode of Sidetracked, rate and review it, share it with a friend, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
See you next time.
See ya.